Well, I've travelled up to York today to meet Steve Starkey. Thanks very much, Steve, for agreeing to talk to us.
My pleasure.
Steve has got a very unusual strategy for winning at betting. Steve, can you explain a bit about who you are, what you do, please?
Yeah, Steve Starkey, I've been in the industry, or betting industry, since the age of 13 or 14. But at the age of 46, I suddenly left my employment. It was 2002, we took a hotel in Blackpool. But as it turned out, we were very fortunate that when I left the industry changed very rapidly. We had the advent of Betfair, and we also, at that time, got an influx of reality TV betting programmes, which no one really understood. I quickly got the grasp of how to bet on these things, and play a strategic long game, and I've bet on them now successfully for 16 years. How successful? I've never had a losing quarter outside of July, August and September, when there's nothing going on, so I tend not to bet those three, but the other three quarters of the year I've never won less than £6,000 a quarter, £2,000 a month. So of these 16 years, my estimation is that I've made over £500,000, and that's the equivalent of getting a salary of £40,000 a year for basically sat on my backside.
So you said that you were in your late 40s when you got the eureka moment, but I understand you were in the industry from a very early age.
Yes, started at 13, live in York, started 13, 14, job as a tic-tac, racecourse clerk. As a group of 10, one of my best friends is Brent Dolan, who was well known in the industry. So it was only a logical progress that a lot of my group of school friends would become in the industry. I've got two friends who are racecourse bookmakers. I started work for Ladbrokes at 17, as I was too young to work in betting shops. And then I progressed to a private bookmaker, and then at 28 I started for Hills. And I had 16 great years there. But my expertise, although I was employed in the shops, my expertise and my knowledge was always better suited to the products themselves. I used to run courses for gambling awareness, bet profitability, odds compiling, and teach people that. So when I left the industry, I was straight away ready to take advantage of what I knew.
So were you a winning punter on other media like horse racing, football, that sort of thing?
Now or then?
Then. When you were in the industry, did you take advantage of your knowledge and sort of poacher?
Yes, as when I worked sort of in latter years, and price wise became very popular, of course. If I was in the visiting a shop, I'd always take advantage of that. And I remember an instance when one of the other firms, they did a 2-for-1 offer on the 49s bet. Whereas if you had one, bet one, get one free. I did a quick calculation that if I took every number in trebles from 1 to 49, it would cost me, for a penny line, it would cost me 60 quid. And my return would be 90 quid. With the one free, I'd be staking 60 and getting 90 for every time I did it. And I did that in about three shops. They weren't very happy about it. But anything like that, I've always been, yes, there's an opportunity, let's take it.
So when you mentioned that the betting exchanges and the reality TV sort of collided and came around the same time, what was your early betting history using those tools?
We bought the hotel. It was May, June 2002. And I have a friend who was in the industry, and he came to me in October. He said, have you seen this, Steve, Betfair? He said, right. He said, give me £100, I'll open you an account, which we did. He said, you'll get the grasp of it. He says, be very careful though, Steve. He says, there's a lot of sharks, a lot of shrewd people on Betfair, and if you're not careful, they'll turn you over. My very first bet was on Fame Academy, and there was three singers, a young Devon girl, Sinead someone or other. She's a great singer, but she in the final with her was David Sneddon. Now David Sneddon was from Scotland, and of course, come the final vote, everyone in Scotland voted for David Sneddon. I laid him £10 at 6-4, so a £15 loss. And I went away, thought about it, I knew why I'd lost, I thought that won't happen again. And I think that's the art of it.
So the fairly inauspicious start was actually the breakthrough?
Yes, because very, very soon you think, well, okay. I think Michelle McManus managed to win Pop Idol the following year. Michelle McManus was a Scottish girl, relatively well built. Everybody felt sorry for her. She was a very good singer, but it was quite evident that with the level of Scottish support and the level of production support she received, in fact, at 20-1, she was a very likely winner. And of course she won. It went from my £15 loss, probably on the very next event, turned into a four-figure gain.
So you do bet on a wide range of these type of events. Can you give us an idea of your yearly betting calendar and what programmes you have to endure to...
Endure is probably the right word. It's, I won't endure Love Island, by the way. It's one step too far. Well, I mean, yeah, the first event is to get the racing post January the 2nd and look at the New Year's specials. And there's usually, historically, there's been some massive value about. One special which used to come up every year was 20-1. Osama bin Laden to be captured this year. Now, that was 20-1 in any one given year. So if you take that over a 5-year time span, you're virtually getting 4-1. The most wanted man in the world by America would be found in the next 5 years. And it was the wrong price. He didn't win for the 3 years that I did it, but the first years I didn't back it, it won. And another great special, which I just did miss out on, I think it was 2006, 2007. I think the William Hill odds compiler had too many sherries over the new year. And he put up 66-1, the premiership to be decided on goal difference. now a cursory glance through the record books tells you that generally there's less than 7 points between the first and the second side. So the chances of there being no points differential isn't 66-1. I made it an 8-1 shot. I availed myself of £30 worth in online, £30 in shop. And on the very last game of the season, I was sweating. And Manchester United won and won, went and won, and Chelsea could only draw. So my bet was lost. But the value, I did have the value. And in any game or any particular aspect of gambling, if you get a value price, if your price is better than the expected outcome, you will win over a long period.
Talking of long periods, on the list you gave me, the early January, you start watching Celebrity Big Brother. Now, you've got to sit and watch every episode of that to cop.
I wouldn't watch every episode. Simple reason that it you would get too involved. In a lot of things like Big Brother, Celebrity Big Brother, the audience themselves will dip in and out of it. There are people who go on Digital Spy who follow it 24 hours a day, follow the programme religiously. As a punter, a gambler, making a book of it, you've got to adapt the view of what the casual is doing. The person who turns up, watches a couple of days a week, but comes the final will vote. So your opinion needs to marry in with theirs, so you need to be one of them. So I do watch and try and see what the production intentions are, which is very important in Big Brother. The producers want an entertaining programme. So sometimes, like Anne Widdecombe, we saw with Anne Widdecombe last year, they will do their best to keep a controversial character into the final.
Okay, so can you give me a list of the other things that you bet on? Because they're quite varied.
Yeah, I've omitted two flies up crawling up the wall. But throughout the year, I do Dancing on Ice, which is a programme I quite like. The young lad won it this year. Obviously, he was Jake Quickenden. He's a reality TV veteran. fairly obvious at an early stage he was a decent skater, likeable, northern, decent skater, going to take a lot of beating. 5-1 was too big, and he'd never looked, apart from week one where he was a bit weak, he never looked like getting beat. We then have the voice, much the same really. I do the Golden Globes, which are Golden Globes, for those who don't know, are the awards in America, which are a precursor to the Oscars. The Golden Globes are decided by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, of which there are 90 members. There are sort of 90 guys across the world, 6 from England, 6 from the UK, 4 from Germany, New Zealand, everywhere, and they're the foreign press. And they sit down and decide who they think should win the Golden Globe Awards. They're trying second guess what will win the Oscars. But they don't always do it. They like the showy films. And I do remember Avatar were coming up. Cameron produced it. Massive budget film, big animal, graphics. It won their best picture immediately from being 3-1 to win the best picture at the Oscars. It went to 4-6. It was a typical film which the press would like, but there was very little acting in it. So the Actors Guilds at the Oscars were never going to vote for Avatar. And The Hurt Locker, which was a very low budget film, would appeal to the Oscar voters. And that went from 2-1 to 6-1. And I remember the following morning being surprised they had that much effect on the market and piling into The Hurt Locker to win Best Film at the Best Picture at the Oscars at 6-1. We also, it's many, many, many different things that you can bet on. And I do the National Television Awards. Again, it's virtually trying to think of it as a, for which a lot of soap operas, things like that. But if the person is a likeable character in the soap opera, they tend to vote for them. The Middle England mothers and the people will vote from Lucy Fallon, who plays Bethany in Coronation Street, being a great example. Although I didn't back her, I fully realise now that why she won, because she's so likeable. We then have the SAG Awards, which are the Screen Actors Guild Awards, and they're probably the best precursor for the Oscars. We have the Brit Awards. All I can really say about the Brit Awards is that money talks. But and what one of the best aspects of reality gambling is, if I give you the analogy of Liverpool playing Arsenal, everybody would have an opinion what price that is. If I were to ask you which act would be best male at the Brit Awards, there's probably only about 1,000 people nationwide who would have a strong opinion and be able to make an informed opinion. If you consult with those people or can tap into their way of thinking, you will succeed. Dua Lipa was the public vote this year for the best breakthrough act. Dua Lipa up against four other acts, and she was obviously far, far, far in front.
Steve, I must admit, when I looked down through and I saw that you've added the Eurovision Song Contest to this, how many hours of drivel do you have to watch?
Can I be honest? I like the Eurovision Song Contest. And I will put one thing on record. Every year I tell people I watch and bet on the Eurovision Song Contest. Oh, well, we've got no chance. Nobody likes us. And it's not that we have no chance. If we sent the right artist singing the right song, we would do very well. There are 6 levels of Eurovision voting. The strong countries, Russia, Ukraine, Serbia, who all get votes off neighbouring countries. We're at the bottom end of that. Well, that doesn't mean we can't win. In fact, 2 years ago, 2000, Portugal won. Before they won in 2016, they hadn't qualified for the final for 13 years. So it's nonsense to suggest that people don't like us. We just don't send the right records. It is a great, it's a great contest. And I look on it is that things change because you the song's released in 3 formats. You get the, as we do, the national final, where Surrey sung best and we heard everyone sing. We get the finals where the selected person is just released and they've given they perform the song. And then we get the ones where they just release a studio version. And this year, Australia was a studio version. And it's Jessica Maudboy. Oh, and she was the studio version, it sounded great. And she came tumbling down in the odds, 20 to 1, down to 12 to 1. 4 to 6 for the top 10. But then, someone, you know, it sounded great. And then some guy, I go on a forum, I talk to him, he writes a blog called Entertainment Odds, Rob Ferber, a great judge. He says, well, okay, that sounds great, but listen to this from 2 years ago when she sang live at Eurovision and she missed every note. So off we go, to rehearsals, and she's still very strong in the betting. Her first rehearsal, they were laughing at her. And it all went very wrong for her. But still, people who had tipped her up at 14 to 1 were saying, well, that doesn't matter, that doesn't matter. She'll get it right on the night. She can sing better than that. And one of the key things about gambling is, or gambling profitably, is when you are wrong, you put your hand up and say, actually, when I tipped you Australia at 14 to 1, I was wrong. Bail very quickly. And, you know, I mentioned Rob Ferber, Entertainment Odds. There's a guy, ESC Tips, Gavster. He said, Australia is a banging tune. It's great. But then as soon as he heard the rehearsal, they actually go across to listen to them. When he heard the rehearsal, he says, forget this. It ain't going anywhere near winning.
You've sort of beat me to one of my questions, really. Is there a little select group of you guys that get together and sort of collude with your opinions for these reality TV programmes?
Yes. Yes, I do talk to people. I talk to people in the industry. I speak to the Hills compiler, Rob Dixon, a bit on Twitter. I speak to a couple of lads who compile for Skybet on Twitter. But equally, outside of that, I have a forum where I can swap ideas and put bets up and get honest opinions. If you go on some sites, you'll get... And again, if someone opens up that makes a comment, I was the first... I remember last year, I was the first to highlight the chances of such and such winning. And that person is telling you, you need to listen to me because I'm a good tipster. But the fact that he's telling you to listen to him tells you that he hasn't got he/she hasn't got the confidence in their own ability to make you listen to them. So if someone says, I've won everything for so many years, I've this and I'm that, I honestly pay no attention to them. If people of quality, they will find you.
Well, getting to the nitty gritty of this, you've told us now how that you've been successful. You've obviously got good connections, you do good research, and you're a very sharp cookie in these markets. How on earth do you get on?
Someone once said to me, I'm not the cleverest person in the world. He said, but one thing you are, Steve, is resourceful. And yes, 2002, I opened betting accounts, I had betting accounts with everyone. And 2003, 2004, a couple of them said, contacted me, having been restricted, will you bet with us? And we will let you bet what you can. That's okay. So long as we know what you're betting, that's okay. And I had them with Bet365, Betfred, Hills and Skybet. But over the duration of time, those accounts sort of filter away. People get sick of you. So you then move on. So the next account, after I had all mine, because I borrowed a friend's identity. Came Shirley Starkey, was my mother, and it is quite embarrassing that my mother is, I think she was 75 at the time, and I did have a query with Paddy Power, and I thought, well, what do? Account name Shirley Starkey. I thought, I can impersonate my mother. So, yes, afternoon, Paddy Power. Hello, darling. Shirley Starkey here, which is very much how my mother talks. And the guy on the other end of the phone says, yes, sir. But having gone to the lengths, I just persevered. And that's all you can do. And eventually, yes, madam. He resolved my query. But it does show that opening an account with a 75-year-old female's name is not a good idea. But then from Shirley Stack, you see, people, if people know what you do and you're okay with them, and you'll do them a favour, they do a favour. I went from Shirley on to these guys, all these accounts are all long gone, and you know, thank God for it, really. And I think I'm generally within about 2 years, I'm exhausted out. But I do have people who say, right, okay, who will put money on for me. So if I ring them, text, are you in town today? Yes, visit Ladbrokes and put this on. And Amy is one of those people. My other daughter goes round where she lives and will put me money on. And I've got another lad who goes round and will put me money on. So, and I'm quite adept at, I'll just jump on the bus from York, this Zapper. It cost me £10 to get to Leeds. I can walk around Leeds in comfort and get on what I like, really. So, although it's never easy to get on, and I can't just watch TV on a Saturday night and have this and that, ultimately, if you're resourceful enough, you will find a way. And if you're successful, you are resourceful.
You mentioned earlier Betfair. How come you don't have it all on there?
I do have Betfair. I do use Betfair. I'm a premium charge payer. But usually the markets that I bet on, the reality bets, the market generally isn't as well formed on Betfair. For example, I think after the first auditions for X Factor this year, Grace Davis was on audition show one, and Raxu were the very first act shown. The fact is they went on to finish first and second. So I was wanting to back, one firm went 20-1 Raxu, and 10-1 Grace Davis. So I spent the following day, there was nothing available on Betfair, but I spent the following day getting on what I could around Hills, Ladbrokes and Corals. And, you know, you won't get massive amounts on, but you will get sufficient on to give you a trading edge.
So I've noticed on your list, which, as I said a couple of times, is varied, you know, no political bets. Now, surely if you're that good at guessing the British nation, you should be having it spark off betting on politics.
Yes, actually, I say, I didn't put politics down because it's not a calendarised event, shall we say, but political markets, as they come up, I do bet on them. I bet on the last by-election, I think it was the Lib Dems to finish second. The last actual bet I had was a political bet. And it was, will there be a Conservative leadership election this year? Up to the 31st of December. And it was 1-4 yes, 3-1 no. And the Conservative Party, for there to be a leadership election, they have to get rid of Theresa May. Theresa May cannot stand in a leadership election. There has to be a vote of no confidence. But for to get to the vote of no confidence, you need 48 MPs saying, we have no confidence in Theresa. Ask the party, and then you need, of the 320 Conservative MPs, you'll need 160 to say, we haven't got confidence in Theresa. And that is a big number. So the 3-1 no Conservative leadership was a very, very, it was a strong bet. It's 10 to 11 this morning. And I would suggest that's still value. I don't think Theresa May face a vote of no confidence, but all the Remain MPs and the soft Brexit MPs will vote for her. The fact that only 48 of her MPs actively want rid of her tells me that she's going to win a vote of 320.
So you started your betting life, I assume, betting on horses, football, etc. Have you abandoned all of those solely for reality?
No. I still, Cheltenham every year, I like a bet at Cheltenham. I do bet on horses as a lad. I remember back in Mrs. McCarty to win the 1,000 guineas. And as lads, we were, as 13 of us, we were only horse racing. Bronze Hill for the Lincoln, Tatchy Poo for the guineas. And I was relatively successful in those days. I remember at a young age, back in Troy, I was maybe 22. I had £50 at 7-1 Troy to win the Derby, and it won by 6 lengths or so. immediately, the next day, my friend says, oh, this Tommy Carmody, he's got the job for Michael Dickinson. He'll ride doubles, trebles everywhere. So Tommy Carmody, champion jockey, 7-1, well, put £100 on that. He rode 3 winners the next day. The following day, fell and broke his leg. But, again, it wasn't the right bet.
Okay, Steve, so what does it take to be a successful reality punter?
Many things. The lack of an ego is one. I don't go and shout to people, oh, I'm a professional punter. I'll go into the pub and say, I make a few quid. And I always try and play down my part as a successful punter. Otherwise, people expect off you, tell me what wins is telling. And it's something that I don't want to get into the sort of method of having to tell them to back things. Because if you tip them a loser, they only remember the loser. They don't remember the winners. So don't shout how good you are. Let other people decide how good you are. Research is great, but you have to take the opinions of others on board. So being open-minded is essential. I'm not the best judge of Eurovision, but I leave the Eurovision judgment to Rob Ferber at Entertainment Odds, Daniel Gould at SofaBet, and gather ESC tips. I listen to what they have to say, and then make my judgment. So, but I don't always follow them. If I don't agree with what they're saying, I'll move my own way. But you should always listen. So research, listen, take good advice, be ready to discuss, and change your opinion. If sometimes you think, well, actually, no, I did fancy very strongly Donald to win The Voice this year, but I could see it went from 5-1 to 4-6. But 4-6, I began to see the weaknesses, and I bailed out and levelled off with Ruti, who eventually win. So don't ever think that you're unbeatable. You're not. And don't think you have to know more than anyone else on anything. I say I take advice off other people, and I give advice, and it works better that way than being a lone soldier. I will say that you sometimes on Betfair, you will say at the start of Celebrity Big Brother will start in August, will immediately be a train, such and such to win Big Brother, this is their train. But once you've started their train, you only look for reasons they will win. You don't look for reasons they don't win. If you have a bet, or are thinking of gambling, or betting on someone today, okay, this is why I think she'll win, or he'll win. This is why I think they won't win. Does one outweigh the other? You've got to be open-minded. If you've got a name saying, this is my train, you're not listening to the people who say, I don't win. And that's a mistake. You will lose in the long run. You've got to take the views of others on board.
Talking of that, do you take notice of sort of polls on daytime TV and in papers and things like that about reality TV programmes when they sort of say who's out next, that sort of thing?
Yes, it's daft not to. But what you must also outline is that if you look at a programme like Strictly Come Dancing, who's the best, who do you, sometimes they ask the who do you want to win or who's the best dancer. Who you want to win is a more relevant question than who's the best dancer. For a few example, on last year's Strictly Come Dancing, Alexander Burke was the best dancer. Who do you want to win? It would be Joe McFadden. So you temper what the polls tell you, but then the polls are all internet-based nowadays. So to access them polls, people have to go onto the computer, vote in a poll, and then press the button to send. To vote for someone to win, it's a completely different thing. And there are thousands and thousands of thousands of people outside of those polls, and you have to gauge what they are thinking. And sometimes, when we had the hotel in Blackpool, we used to be full of old ladies. And I used to say to them on a Thursday night, who's going to win dancing? Oh, such. And they would always tell me the winner. The old ladies would tell me the winner. So polls are useful, but you need to work out what use they are to you. I have a friend, and he runs a website called telestats.com. It's run by a guy, Danza, and he measures every aspect. Facebook likes, Twitter likes, Instagram likes, on everything over a 10 minute, 20, 40, yeah. And that's great. But equally, do think what's happening outside of those polls. Yeah, one of the things I do, you know, I say I listen to other people, and I've mentioned Rob Ferber over at Entertainment Odds. He's a great judge on Eurovision, Strictly Come Dancing, X Factor. They're big contests, so I would perhaps, you know, if you're thinking of starting reality betting, read what he has to say. Also read what Daniel Gould over at SofaBet has to say. He's a great, you know, he really, really, really does read these contests so very well. And for the information on, you know, how the voting's going, how the poll's going, telestats.com. It'll give you all the information up to date there in front of you so you can make your judgments. Information is invaluable.
And are these fee-paying websites, or are they all free?
All free, all free.
So you've had to adapt already in 15 years?
Yes, absolutely. The very first year, when Eurovision, first Eurovision, you never got to hear the songs. All you had was a sort of, you were waiting for a list of grainy songs to appear on, and you were listening in with stuff. And they all sounded rubbish. You had no visual. It was all sort of recorded in a studio. And nowadays, you get the studio song, you get the thing song, and you get three. But you have to say which one is great in the studio, but they can't perform live. And once you've got that right, you've got more of a chance of getting the betting right.
So did you foresee the Finnish heavy metal band winning and the transgender
Lordy,
person?
Lordy was a bit of a disaster for me. It was a year where I wasn't totally massively involved in it. But Conchita, the Austrian singer, Austria, another country I've got no record of winning Eurovision, I could well see her winning. And the simple reason is that sometimes different stands out. Different, and even look at this year's winner, Netta, the Israeli girl, she was different. The song was different, she was different. The previous year, the Portuguese guy, Salvador, he was different, the song was different. So different is good. You won't get it right every year. And sometimes you think, well, that went a bit of a disaster. But so long as you're right more often than you're wrong. And the Eurovision isn't only one market, isn't only the outright market. I would say people just tend to concentrate all their betting around the win market. There are top 10 markets. There are to finish last markets, to qualify, not to qualify markets. There are so many different markets. And I think, you know, in Eurovision, probably more so, I think there's about 70 different markets in the Eurovision on the open day. And a lot of these companies now do a thing called request a bet, ask for odds, things like that. And they're all eager to sort of push that. And for someone like me, that's great, because I can ask them something. And I think that I will say it was what odds can I have that Ireland give Lithuania the 12 points? And I got 7-1. And the 7-1, I backed the 7-1, it went to 3-1, I backed the 3-1, I backed the 2-1. In reality, it was an odds on shot. And because you can take those, you've got to maximise those opportunities. The biggest national race in Ireland after Irish people is Lithuanian people. So they all vote Lithuanian, they're all very patriotic. So it was a very good bet.
So some punters are a little bit snooty, so they might, seeing the title of this interview, thought, you know, I'm not having to go on celebrity Big Brother or markets like that. Now they might have thought, hang on a minute, I'm missing out here. So what should punters that want to dip their toe in look for?
The big advantage of a reality TV market, and certainly Big Brother, is that it lasts for Big Brother can last up to 13 weeks. Celebrity Big Brother lasts for a month. So that if at first you're in a position where you think, oh, that's gone wrong, and what I do tend to do is try and pick three bigger prices out in Celebrity Big Brother, back them up through laying the field, and I try and use sort of, yeah, lay them. But you've got the, if you're in a rubbish position, you do have the chance to trade out. And you, when I say to the guy at Hills, I said, you know, are you doing betting for this? Oh, I don't know about it. I said, well, the more you do betting on it, the better you become at it. I'm a better reality gambler now, having done it 16 years, than I was at year one. My year one bet was a losing bet on David Snedden. But if you learn and think why you lost, what's going on, and do this, yeah, I'm going to back a Scottish guy in X Factor. I won't go wrong. I'll back a Northern guy in the Dancing on Ice. You'll gradually learn the secrets of each event. Every event has its own little foibles. And when you spot those foibles, you say, yeah, okay, right, I know that. NTA, yeah, that's a like, she plays a likeable character. You begin to build up a pitch and you get better and better and better. It doesn't get easier and easier and easier because the bookmakers are closing your accounts. And the bookmakers aren't really desperate to bet on these things we've talked about today. But they need to.
So would you merge markets? Do you have a few quid on in the betting shop and then maybe lay it on the exchange and that sort of thing?
Yes, I have been known. I will go around betting shops saying, okay, I want to get myself, it's a bit like the Karma Sutra, I don't want to get myself in a position I can't get out of. So I'll go through all the betting shops, I'll have with Donal, I backed him at 5-1 in the betting shops. I never laid it off, and then I thought, well, actually, yes, because I don't think he's a 4-6 shot. If he was 4-6 and I thought he was 1-2, I would just keep it. But ultimately, reality TV, if you've got yourself in a position, you can trade out. It's difficult to trade out in a 5-furlong sprint at Hamilton. But in reality TV, you'll always get the chance to trade out.
And would you be tempted very early on to say this person cannot win as long as there's a sun in the sky and lay big odds?
No. I spoke to about a couple of guys I do like. The guy who does SofaBet, Daniel Gould. A couple of years ago, on the X Factor, there was a Finnish girl. She actually sang in the Eurovision this year, Sara Aalto. And, you know, this, Sharon Osbourne's there saying, oh, this is my act from... I don't know where she's from. She's from somewhere abroad. And I mean, which really is... And that's all planned. But Sharon Osbourne saying, I don't care about this person. She's rubbish. Don't pay any attention to her. And she was in the sing-off for, I think, the first 2 weeks with Sara Aalto. She can't win. And she's 100-1. And I think Dan Gould took the opinion that, yeah, I can lay her at 50-1. I'll lay £500 at 50-1. I have a £25,000 liability, but I'm going to make 500. But the fact is that the first two sing-off performances she did, she actually performed very creditably. And I think Carol Len thought, well, this girl can sing, she can put on a show, and we can have fun with her. And she then progressed. I mean, she got to the final two. She traded at 4-6. And because Dan has such an effect, he's such a good judge, and he has an effect on the market, a lot of people had joined in and they were carrying big Sara Aalto reds. In the final, Simon said something innocuous to Matt Terry, whatever happens, you've done yourself well. And they took that as a sign that Matt Terry wasn't winning. So suddenly Matt Terry, from looking like the winner, went from 4-6 out to 3-1 because they were trying to reverse the Sara Aalto positions. So again, yes, it is tempting to say that person's got no chance. But every now and again, that will come back and bite you. And if you like winning big, but don't mind losing big, it could be an approach, not my approach.
So people watching this now, is it feasible? I mean, it sounds like you're a very select little club. Is it feasible for somebody watching this to take on board what you've said and make it pay even for a living?
Well, yes, I mean, I've made a living 16 years, and my profits have been constant. It's the equivalent of a £40,000 a year salary. Just got my son through school, paid our mortgage. We were quite fortunate, and very fortunate in the early years, that we had a hotel, and my wife ran the hotel and I was working in the hotel, that all my leisure time, whilst I was doing nothing, I could sit on the laptop and gamble. And we made good money and we invested that money. But those opportunities are still there for people. I know people who are winning good money gambling on reality TV. You can't be the top dog forever. And at some stage, people get past me, and I know that. I know I'm 62, and I know on the forum say, oh, he's a silly old bugger's cracking up again. But, you know, I've been there 16 years, so it doesn't owe me anything.
So one bit of advice for people at home?
One bit of advice. Tread carefully. Don't go overboard. Don't expect to be good immediately, but learn lessons.
Brilliant. Steve Starkey, thank you very much.
For the latest political betting news and odds, check in with our expert William Kajani at starsportsbet.co.uk. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.